Thanks very much. I'll start with a point from Sexton. The key. I asked for a sign. A fresh yellow rose. Just one. I wondered if you heard me. For 6 long months, you left me linger, hedged in the shade of uncertainty. You held the answer, the key. I asked for a fresh yellow rose, just one. On the first day of the 7th month, faith found me. Or just as I was about to lose all hope, faith found me. There on my threshold, its gold glint illuminating my heart. One fresh yellow rose blossomed before me. Your answer, my glory, the key. Thanks. This is in memory of a friend of mine. We grew up together when we were very young, Teresa. You were just an innocent teenage girl when they locked you away, Teresa. Even though it seems like only yesterday, my memory mirrors the distance to our wild youthful summers when that rustic bridge called us. Beneath the bowed archway, we lapped up the fluorescent sun, which filtered through the ribcage of the waxed railway sleepers. Hours spent in the stream, just the two of us, with a tinge of Carrizo in the air. Casting slate stones downriver, skipping them to the rhythm of the rippling water floor. Our laughter could be heard throughout the Rockies. As we paddled, you sang, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Those days are long gone, Teresa, and so are you. The day they took you away, that Saturday, all day I waited. You never came. Something wasn't right, my instinct told me. So I made my way to your house. On the cardinal red polished doorstep, I hesitated, then called your name. Teresa! Copper-tipped fingers threw open the door, your mother. Her jaded feet wore purple braids of varicose veins, which almost strangled her naked ankles. And, choking from the sweet Afton cigarette she was puffing, she cried. She's in the hospital. I ran home in a panic, to be greeted by the echo of the Angelus ringing out. Each deafening chime maddened me as I thought of you in those long, lonesome corridors between walls that partitioned you from the spring of your youth. My last memory of you, Teresa. Like an abandoned puppy, you waddled on the busy road, shoulders bent under the burden of your cross. Red-faced, panic-stricken, and waving your arms at drivers ignoring you. I was about to pretend I didn't see you, but my conscience would not let me. I stopped the car to let you in. You recognized me. Helplessly cried, take me back to the hospital, take me home. On the way you told me how lucky I was, how lovely I looked, and what a lovely car I drove, stroking my jaw with the back of your gentle hand. It's only a banger, Teresa, I nervously joked. There we were in our late 30s, parked outside the hospital entrance, and you asked if I remembered the good days, said you were lonesome. Of course, Teresa, those special days are tucked deep within my heart. A tap on the window suddenly brought us back, as two nurses came to your assistance. You proudly introduced me as your friend, and through my tear-filled eyes in the rearview mirror, I could see you waving before we both vanished into our own very different worlds. The forgotten dead. Under the shadow of a tall wooden cross, paupers lie, poorest of the poor. St. Bridget gives refuge to evil-eyed ghosts, surrounded by bushes on a bleak, isolated hill where birds soar in the open sky, while the rest of the world below sinks deeper into its oblivion. Drenched in a rush of obsession, does anybody whisper a Hail Mary, light a candle, or lay flowers for those whose lives were impoverished, died undignified in the poorhouse, carcasses measured for timber boxes, lobbed on a horse and cart, now hushed beneath the earth? And this is a follow-up to that famine one, the yellow side. In the famine years, open desolation fell upon the land day after day. Perpetual death filled the graveyards to the brim. In the city, a 10-year-old little girl is waked on the cold, cobbled street, her petite body laid upon a clump of straw. By her side, her father sat, his frail back to the wall, face buried in his hands. Destitute and humiliated, he placed a plate on her corpse to collect pennies for the price of a coffin. He knows it won't be long before he joins her in a shallow grave where the paupers call the yellow sighs. This poem is a result of the 5-word challenge that Bridget, myself, Margaret, Mary and Terry last year. The first 3 lines belong to the rest. I figured it all out by myself. Okay. Ocean, peninsula, free the sullen and corpse in other words. Dingle Peninsula. Over the Dingle Peninsula in remote rural Ireland, storm clouds, densest treacle, painted a sullen picture, a curtain of rain veiling our restriction. From the foot of an open mountainside, we let loose rocks, which split open with a mighty whack, releasing bursts of energy. We shouted with joy as enormous waves washed our troubles far out to the distance downwards. Afterwards, in Nora Murphy's public house, by an open turf-burning fire, pampered by manicures and Guinness, stress-free and satisfied with life for a while, for we left our troubled baggage with the ocean, only the ocean. This poem is dedicated to Bridget Wallace. It's about her old apartment. Okay. Under the pear tree for Bridget. Under the pear tree on a sunny Sunday evening, we sat upon the cast iron bench. The silver wind chime that clung from the cleavage of a blossomed branch reflected the early evening sunlight. Daffodils and dandelions dazzled as we listened to a chant of the birdsong. A flutter of wings among wooded stems lifted our spirits. Under the watchful eye of a spirit presence, we spoke of our grandfathers, the role they played in the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and of the curfew killings in 1921. Bridget recollected the story told of Alderman Joseph Thompson's funeral, her grandfather on her mother's side, as she described the horse-drawn hearse and the red-robed city fathers who marched the Barrel of Honour. A sense of pride lit her smile when she whispered. They were like crimson-cloaked warriors woven together as they marched to the rhythmic pace of the horses' iron shoes. This boy is the diamond necklace, and it was an exercise we did with the workshop with Bridget Wallace, and I had forgotten about this night. This was the night my first daughter was conceived. Mm-hmm. The diamond necklace. The velvet box, warm as claret, on the dressing table caught my eye. Inside, familiar diamonds. Taking the necklace in my palm, I paused. My thoughts drift back. 17, delighted. My first dress sense. The necklace flattered my satin gown. My teenage idol crossed the floor, clad in a three-piece dress suit. His flirtatious smile gave me goosebumps. I blushed when he asked me to dance. The glint in his eyes made me tremble. On the dance floor, whispered intimacies gave birth to love. Okay. This is my brother. He drowned when he was 23 and I was 16. He prayed for a flood. You prayed for a flood. After the heavy rainfall, pushed your bike up the mossy slope. Always in your element there, perched upon the riverbank. Cast your line into the Shannon, fished for trout. Seagulls hovered above the river, calm in the drift of a mid-spring day. The mountain's blue patchwork saw you slip. The pull of the current followed you. No one came to your rescue. Since then, Gerard, so much has changed. So much water under the bridge. But today I climbed that slippery slope, submerged in the protest to save the Shannon's water. I sensed your presence. It followed me home. Summer of 75 for my brother-in-law Nick. In those days, summers were scorchers. Tie-dye t-shirts, Levi shorts and brown scapulars, all cobbed out for the swim. In the stretch of the long summer evening, my pal and I dived from the shoulder of the riverbank into the Shannon River. Arms skimming the water's surface, we swam like fish towards Mick in his fishing boat. We named him Captain Hook because of his black eye patch, fisherman's hat studded with fly hooks, and strong suntanned arms tattooed like a sailor. Way out of our depth, we saw no danger. Clinging to the stern, kicking our feet, we sank. Michael rowed the boat ashore. Sure. Okay. One more. This was the Bob Dylan concert. Our 30th wedding anniversary, and my husband gave me the tickets, so I went up on my own. Yes. Wow. Bob Dylan, he didn't like Bob Dylan anyway, so the Bob Dylan concert, right? The poet in his white Panama hat sang numerous songs, one after the other, each one mesmerizing. When he sang Lay Lady, the fans went wild. Spontaneous applause echoed through the stadium. I waved my arms and sang along. And like a child of the 60s, clad in a crisp white kaftan, Indian beads and matching aqua earrings, faded Levi jeans and cowboy boots. I was serious in my intentions. So I drank Carlsberg, smoked roll-ups, and got high on the rhythm of the music. Captivated by the presence of the poet, I danced in the dazzle of the sun. Thanks very much. Thank you.